This is Just Women, every Tuesday at 1 o'clock on Brooklands Radio.
I'm delighted to welcome our first guest, who is Suzanne Hodnett. Welcome to the show, Suzanne, and thanks for joining us.
Hi, Sharon. Thank you for having me.
We normally start by asking our guests for a bit of background information and what brought you to this point.
Okay. Well, as a freelance web designer and developer, I've been doing that for about 10 years in my own business, but have been doing that actual work for 20-odd years now. And I literally just started my business because my eldest daughter, went to school, and I couldn't fit a full-time job around her drop-off and pick-up times. So I started my own business, went freelance, and I just haven't looked back.
And you have a very exciting venture, or a couple of very exciting ventures. First of all, you work with a charity called Kisumu Children Trust, which is based in Kenya. Can you just tell the listeners a bit about that?
Yes, it's a fascinating charity. They set up an orphanage out in Kisumu, and that basically just rescues street children and gives them a safe place to live, food, medical care, and an education. And the street children in Kisumu it's a desperate situation. There are thousands and thousands and thousands of them. So it's literally the tip of the iceberg what they're actually taking into the home. But at least, you know, there's 70 children there who have a better life than they did have before. And what I do with the charity is I literally do their social media. And I'm just getting more and more involved, trying to help with fundraising, trying to raise awareness. And I do that as part of my business for them.
Who owns the trust?
It's owned by, the trustees, shall I say, particularly a person called Peter Briley. He was the one who founded the whole thing, and it literally started with a letter from a pastor out in Kenya who managed to get hold of his details and sent him a letter to ask for a £10 note, because that would make a dramatic difference to their lives in looking after the children that they were trying to do in their church.
Is there something particular about the Kisumu area, or is it this a Kenyan-wide problem?
It's an Africa-wide problem. Right. Kisumu is full of street children, as is Nairobi, which is the next large city. But it's all over Africa. I've literally just come back from Tanzania, where I was doing something similar in helping in an orphanage there. The problem is throughout.
Why did you go to Tanzania? Obviously, you've got the involvement with Kenya or Kenya. Were you invited as well, or you were particularly interested to go and see the contrast there, or is there no contrast?
The going out to Tanzania started before I actually started working for the Kenyan charity. It was something I desperately wanted to do and have been wanting to do for about 20 years now. I went to South Africa in my early 20s, and that was just actually with work. But I think there's something about Africa that just gets in your head once you've seen it. And over the years, I've seen more and more of these projects start to come to the fore, encouraging more people from around the world to go and help out. And I thought, I desperately want to go back to Africa, and I desperately want to help out in a community over there. And my husband said to me, look, you just need to go. And an opportunity came up. Mm-hmm. I booked it. And he's been amazingly supportive. And 9 months after I booked it, I went. And about a month after I booked it, I started working for the Kenyan charity. Oh, otherwise, okay. It would have made more sense for me to go out there. But it was already booked by that time.
And so what were you doing in Tanzania?
I went out to Tanzania to stay literally for 2 weeks. That was all. That was the only time that I was there. And I stayed at an NGO volunteer house. An NGO is their equivalent of our registered charity. It stands for non-government organisation. And it's a lot less regulated than our charities over here. And I stayed at the volunteer house with lots of other white people from all over the world who come to do the same project. And we were teaching, we were helping out in the orphanage, we were helping teach adults. I was in a school. There was so many different things you could do. You could get involved in construction if you wanted to. But teaching was what I wanted to do,
right.
And so I threw myself into it.
What were you teaching?
Teaching English,
okay.
Predominantly. But, I worked at a school in the mornings. I went to an orphanage in the afternoons. I taught adults who got wind of the fact there was a white person in the orphanage, and they thought, right, somebody who can teach us English. So they all started to amass, and a whole class started to form at the orphanage. So I taught them as well. I homeschooled a young girl of 13 who had basically been thrown out of school because she had learning difficulties, and they don't have any way of coping with that and helping her. So she needed extra support, so I could teach her. And so many different things that happened in 2 weeks, but that's in a nutshell.
So the Kisumu Children Trust, it helps orphans, but also children that just need help and support. Is that right?
Yes, that's right. They're not all orphans. Some of them are children who just cannot be cared for any longer at home, because these people are, I mean, the poverty is desperate. It's an awful situation. There is very little in the way of birth control, or rather understanding about birth control. And so the families are just getting bigger and bigger and bigger. And the homes are like one room with six or seven children and two parents living in them. Mm. So a lot of the time, the children in the orphanage, they may have lost one or both parents, usually to AIDS, or they may just be in a situation where they're getting very undernourished. Medical care is obsolete for them, really. And so they are taken into care because the parents can no longer look after them.
Is there much frustration that the national government doesn't do enough to help the children and the families generally, or is it just a kind of, this is how it is, we just have to deal with it?
It is a case of this is how it is. There are so many children, it's difficult for the government to step in. They do step in. I believe there is more that they could be doing. They are trying, but it is going to take generations to change what's going on.
You said something interesting in your bio. You said that, "I believe in the power of education to help children break the cycle for the next generation, pull themselves out of poverty." Do you think that applies to countries like ours here? Do you think that that's possible here, or is it easier almost somewhere else, like in Kenya?
I think it applies across the board, really. Education makes a massive difference. And yes, I think it very much does apply here. In Africa, the standard of education is, again, very desperate. The slightest thing that you can teach them, you don't believe how much you can change their life with just a small amount of education. So, for example, the young girl that I was teaching at home, she'd been in a class of 100, and that's a standard sort of class size there. There's no way she could help, you know, go any further with learning difficulties. They didn't have the staff. They're short of teachers. They couldn't really help her. So I helped her at home, went over her maths and her English. Her maths was fine. She had difficulty with English. That's fine. We made progress in just the few days I was with her. But I also taught her crocheting, because it's just a skill that I had because I enjoyed it. And I'd taken things with me from the UK that I could do with the children. That was one of them. And I taught her how to crochet, and she picked it up quite quickly. Mm. And I thought, well, actually, even if she never manages with academics, that's a skill that she now has, that she can now go on to make blankets and, you know, a whole host of things that she could possibly sell and make a livelihood from that.
That's amazing, actually. I mean, I was quite interested when you said that you were teaching them English. You know, do you have any teaching qualifications, or is it just sort of going with a gut instinct on how to sort of get them to speak your own language? I mean, I don't know if I'd know where to start, really.
It was a challenge because there's no curriculum particularly out there. They just went, "Madame Suzanne, you teach," you know, and that's what I got. And it was like, well, what would you like me to teach?
Yeah.
So I taught English because they're so desperate for English. They almost think that if they get English, then the whole world will open up to them and it will change their lives.
Yeah.
But whether that's true or not, I'm not sure. But I could teach English, especially being as I have a six-year-old daughter who has just gone through the sort of phonics system that they do in early school. So I know what she's been doing, and I could sort of apply that to my teaching. They were at a stage much further on, apparently, with their learning in English in terms of what you watched the teacher write on the blackboard. But when you actually got into it, you realised they hadn't got a clue what she was writing on the blackboard. They literally learned to just copy that down in their textbook. She would tick it, and so long as they copied it down right, she assumed that she'd done her job.
They'd learned it.
Yes, exactly. But there was no comprehension whatsoever. Mm. So I took them right back to do some very basic sounds and phonics and letter pronunciation and small things like that. But, you know, I was only there 2 weeks.
Yeah.
It's not an awful lot turn around in 2 weeks.
How much are they going to retain?
Yes, that's right. Mm. I think it was mainly maths, really, where I had some successes, because maths is a sort of international language, really, talking in numbers. They did sort of understand that. And I did make progress with that. There was one child at the school. I'm not sure how much I achieved, but if I just achieved this one thing, then I feel like it was worth it.
Yeah.
There was this one child who was 10 years old in my class of 80. We had from the age of 5 up to 10. And he was 10 years old, and bless him, he looked in his exercise book and there was crosses through all of his work. He never seemed to get anything right. And we were doing long subtraction, so I sat with him and went through every question. And, of course, by the end of that, I could tick them all because we'd done it together, so we'd got them right. And I gave him a star sticker, which I'd brought with me, and a very good, you know, written over his work. And he was absolutely over the moon, you know, this beaming smile. And he just kept walking around the classroom, just showing it to anybody who would look. And right at the very end of the day, there's another child in exactly the same position, and I sat with him. And I only did about 2 questions with him, and this other little boy came and sat on his opposite side and started showing him how to do it.
Aww.
And I just sat back and watched him teach this child now what he'd just learned. And I thought, yeah, he's understood. That's just fantastic. So, I mean, maybe that's all I achieved in my time at that school, but it was worth it.
Must have been an amazing
feeling. It was. I was beaming with pride at my student.
That is the power of cascade learning.
Yes,
right, just right there.
But, I mean, you had a class of 80 from the ages of 5 to 10. Did you? I mean, in this country, there's a certain number of children in most classrooms across the country who are not interested in learning. Do you get that there, or are they all just so grateful they've got a teacher? Do they appreciate the opportunity?
Not in the school. The orphanage was a very different thing.
Okay.
The children in the orphanage were just adorable and were so happy at anything you could teach them. The adults were desperate at anything. They picked it up and they tried really hard and were dedicated. In the school, a very, very different situation. They were not interested at all. They couldn't sit down long enough to be interested. They never stopped hitting each other, running around. The culture was very, very different. The teachers beat the children. So if there was any sort of misbehaviour, they would just take a stick from the nearest tree and just go around the class and just beat them. And that's how they got order. So, of course, all the children kind of picked up on that's how you behave.
Yeah.
So that's how they behave towards each other. And you're trying to teach through this.
Yeah.
They can't really understand English very well. That's why I'm not sure what I really achieved there.
Were the children hungry? Is that maybe why they couldn't sit down for a long period of time?
Some of them were very thin, some of them not at all. I think that's because their main diet is maize, which is obviously full on carbohydrates. Mm. Some of them get a lot of that, and they had porridge at a sort of break time, which was 11 o'clock. So those who were very short on food, that was a very important meal for them. But some of them were sort of sizable children, so they were sort of living off this maize and putting weight on. But, yeah, others definitely undernourished.
Still malnutrition, though, isn't it?
It's not balanced diet. It is, absolutely. No, not at all.
It's just fuel, isn't it?
Yes, really. That's right. Yeah,
yeah, not getting their key nutrients.
Absolutely.
So I know there's a sponsorship programme, isn't there, through the charity. Is that sort of well taken up by the general public, or...?
We do have quite a reasonable take of that, although there are several children at the orphanage who are still not being sponsored. Obviously, we just have to raise the funds to look after them. But the sponsorship programme is fantastic because then the children write to their sponsor and tell them how they're doing in school. And it really makes that connection between the UK and Kenya. So that people are, you know, spurred on to continue to give to the charity to help this particular child, but also that the children are so happy that they've got this contact in the UK that they can write to and is interested in them.
Yeah, and do they communicate with each other? Do the sponsors tend to write back?
Not so much, I don't think. We are trying to get an internet connection at the home, which will enable more activity over social media. So I'm hoping that will start to come. And the more of a two-way street we can get going, I think the more engaged our sponsors will be with the children, and hopefully that will allow it to grow.
Great. Okay. Good.
it felt very quick, but that's the end of the interview, I'm afraid. But we'll talk to you in the break a lot more about your work. But we'd love for you to come on and talk about Tanzania in more detail and any other visits that you do.
Brilliant.
If anybody wants to donate or has any questions, could you confirm what your contact details are?
Yes, our website is probably the best place to go. It's kazumuchildren.org.uk. And if you go on there, then there are plenty of opportunities to donate and to sign up for sponsorship. You can also go onto our Facebook page, which is /Kazumu Children, and you can donate directly on there if you want to.
Thank you very much for coming on and talking about your amazing experiences in Kenya and Tanzania. That was Suzanne Hodnett.
You're listening to Just Women on Brooklands Radio. You can join in by emailing any comments or questions you may have to justwomen@brooklandsradio.co.uk, or check us out on Facebook. Search for Just Women at Brooklands Radio. Just Women is just what you need.